This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Yes, this may look a bit draconian, but the measures are still necessary if we are to save lives.
That was Itai Roski of the Nonprofit Community Working Group on Health in Zimbabwe regarding the latest lockdown to fight a surge in COVID-19 cases. Details coming up also. Morocco, the U.S., and other countries are holding a joint military drill. And turnout for Algeria's parliamentary election over the weekend was dismal. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The troubled COVID-19 vaccine rollout for South Africa and the entire continent has been dealt another hard blow. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, has declared millions of Johnson & Johnson jabs currently in storage at a South African port unsuitable for use. The doses, along with millions more that were to be distributed across Africa, were produced in Baltimore by a firm called Emergent Biosolutions, which has been tainted by a contamination issue. Darren Taylor reports.
At the beginning of the year, deal after deal for vaccines fell through for the South African government. Then, when it finally got millions of AstraZeneca jabs, they weren't effective against the highly infectious variant in South Africa and were sold to other countries. When the state received 500,000 J&J shots, the FDA temporarily suspended their use following concerns the vaccine caused blood clots. Now the country's lost 2 million J&J shots contained at the port of Gqeberha. Abeda Williams is spokesperson for J&J South Africa.
What will happen to the doses? So we're going to destroy all the product that has been earmarked by the regulatory authorities, and we're not going to give it to any country. What is good for one country must be good for all countries. We don't feel it's fair to give it to a country, even if they would want to accept it. So we none of those batches.
J&J contracted Aspen Pharmacare to package the vaccines in Gqeberha. Aspen's senior executive, Stavros Nicolaou, confirmed to VOA that other than the South African allocation of 2 million, there were several million more that were supposed to have been used across Africa. Williams says these will also be destroyed.
We've been cautious. All the batches are not contaminated. There was one batch that was contaminated that was destroyed, and the other batches, we've just been cautious that we'd rather not send them out.
She declined to disclose the exact quantity of vaccines to be destroyed or to name all African countries affected.
We've contained the issue. We're working with the governments. We're looking at our supply chain. How we communicate to the public has to be cautious because there's a lot of vaccine hesitancy. And if we scare the public, they're not going to take any vaccine, which is not going to be helpful.
Some scientists have called the J&J jab a game changer for the continent. It's the only vaccine that doesn't require a second booster injection. It also doesn't need super cold refrigeration. But the US FDA has shut the Baltimore plant that was set to produce 220 million J&J shots for Africa, effectively ending the continent's supply until J&J is able to bolster production elsewhere. Fatima Hassan, a lawyer who heads the Health Justice Initiative, says J&J owes South Africa an immediate supply of 2 million FDA-approved vaccines.
The U.S. government funded the research for Johnson & Johnson. The U.S. government has the ability and the power within its own domestic rules and context to actually take action against Johnson & Johnson. And I think that Johnson & Johnson owes the South African public, as well as the rest of Africa, an explanation and I think also an apology.
Hassan says the loss of millions of J&J vaccines in Africa will undoubtedly cause thousands of deaths.
The facts playing out on the ground shows a dire situation of a lack of access, not just in South Africa, but the rest of Africa. And we relied on companies that told us that they've got it under control, that they have enough manufacturers, that they have enough supplies, that they will be able to meet all of our demands. But clearly, we put too much faith in the market and we put too much faith in the CEOs of these companies, and they've really let us down.
William says the FDA has approved 300,000 doses of its vaccine for use in South Africa, and those will be delivered later this week. The US government has also pledged to send stocks of Pfizer jabs to the country. G7 country leaders have promised 870 million vaccines to poorer nations. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
United Nations agencies are warning that thousands of children in northern Ethiopia's Tigray province risk dying from starvation and malnutrition-related illnesses because aid agencies cannot reach the region with humanitarian aid. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Conflict-ridden Tigray remains off-limits to United Nations and private aid agencies, despite Ethiopian government promises they would have unfettered access to the region. UNICEF spokesman James Elder says the region is on the brink of famine, adding that without immediate massive assistance, Tigray will face a crisis not seen in a decade.
We are seeing more and more young children and babies slide dangerously close to sickness and potential death from malnutrition. So we've rung alarm bells, and here we are now. We now have, you know, the largest number of people classified as food insecure in a decade since Somalia. And as I say, that very real risks the deaths of tens of thousands of children.
An estimated 250,000 people died in the devastating 2010-2011 Somali famine, more than half of them children under the age of five. The United Nations says more than 350,000 people in Tigray are on the verge of famine. It warns an estimated 33,000 severely malnourished children in inaccessible areas are at high risk of death. The World Health Organization reports its teams and mobile health clinics are ready to go into Tigray and administer care, but have been turned away by the warring parties. WHO spokeswoman Margaret Harris says access to the region is key to tackling what she calls a public health emergency.
Malnourished children are more likely to contract any of the infectious diseases and die of it, such as pneumonia, diarrhea, malaria and measles. Malaria and malnutrition is a lethal combination. So we're over 350 severe acute malnutrition cases among children under 5 years of age last week only. That was just last week, 18 of them with complications.
Harris says WHO is kicking off a cholera vaccination campaign Saturday as the disease thrives during the rainy season, which begins this month. She says 4,000 people will be inoculated as a preventive measure, as Tigray is known as a place with outbreaks in the past. However, she adds, the campaign's success requires safe access by health workers. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Morocco, the United States, and other countries are holding joint military drills through Friday in several regions of Morocco. They include ground, air, and airborne training and tactical simulation, as well as training in command activities and operations against violent extremist organizations. The 17th edition of the annual African Lion exercises include troops from Britain, Brazil, Canada, Tunisia, Senegal, the Netherlands, and Italy, and observers from 30 countries. David DeRoche, associate professor of the U.S. National Defense University, spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about the significance of such military exercises.
They're significant. I mean, the United States and Morocco have a long history of cooperation. You know, Morocco was the first country to recognize the United States during our revolution. But we also have a long series of military cooperation. So in the Ronald Reagan administration, I was an exchange cadet at the Moroccan Military Academy. You know, we used to have bases in Morocco in the 1950s. You know, it goes way back. And prior to this series, there was another series of exercises called Roaring Lion that were held in the 1990s. So this goes back decades, and it's pretty much a standard drill. What's interesting about it is that it's become multinational and multi-country. But again, that reflects more of the U.S. focus on Africa after the establishment of the Africa Command headquarters.
In Senegal, U.S. and Senegalese militaries will demonstrate their combined capability to rapidly deploy and integrate in response to a crisis. In Tunisia, U.S. and Tunisian armed forces will conduct command post exercises and small unit tactical training. On what basis are the military exercises tailored for individual countries like Senegal and Tunisia?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question. So, you know, some countries want to have large exercises, you know, with large numbers of U.S. troops. Morocco traditionally has welcomed the U.S. troops on exercises, or even, for example, the movie Black Hawk Down was filmed in Morocco with U.S. soldiers as participants in the film. So Morocco is very comfortable with that. Some other countries insist on a smaller presence. They don't want to see, you know, American paratroopers falling out of the skies. So a command post exercise is basically staff officers getting together in a tent and, you know, simulating events to see how staffs react without soldiers ranging around the country. And tactical unit training, of course, is usually conducted on military bases or established ranges. And that's things like firing each other's weapons, doing small maneuver drill, perhaps learning different functions for artillery. So different countries are happy with a different level of American involvement. And what this exercise shows is the range of involvement that the United States can do in military exercises on the African continent.
The Pentagon has denied that the military exercise would include areas in the disputed Western Sahara. However, Moroccan Prime Minister insisted that including part of the Western Sahara in the joint military exercise signals the American recognition of Moroccan sovereignty over the Western Sahara. What do you make of that?
This is a touchy issue for the Moroccans, and it's something that they are extremely attuned to, and most other countries are not. Whenever there's any kind of a multinational involvement in Morocco or international involvement, if there's any way possible, you know, if a map is shown that it incorporates the Western Sahara, the Moroccans usually will say this shows that, you know, this organization has recognized the Moroccan incorporation of Western Sahara. But I don't think the United States will have troops on the ground in Western Sahara. I'd be very shocked to hear that, even though it was recognized as part of the Abraham Accords. I think that that's an area that still is a little bit dicey for the United States. So I think that the Moroccans are probably overstating the case here.
That was David DeRoche, Associate Professor at the U.S. National Defense University, speaking with VOA Senior Analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. The turnout for Algeria's parliamentary elections over the weekend was dismal, with less than a third of the 24 million eligible voters casting ballots. According to the Associated Press, the low participation reflects disinterest by voters and the boycott by the pro-democracy movement, which forced longtime President Abdelaziz Bouteflika to resign in 2019, did not help. The head of Algeria's National Independent Authority for Elections, Mohamed Sharfi, said it will take about 4 days for official results to be finalized. President Abdelmajid Tebboune dismissed the low turnout when he cast his ballot Saturday by saying, "Those who voted have sufficient legitimacy." Turnout for the 2019 election that made Tebboune president was only 40%. Ugandan officials are scrambling to find more COVID-19 vaccine as many medical stores have run out of supplies, leaving only enough to last a few days at most. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Many were at first reluctant to get the vaccine, but a resurgence in COVID-19 cases over the past few weeks has sparked a dash to get jabbed. Uganda procured 964,000 doses of AstraZeneca vaccine under the COVAX facility, but medical stores say their stocks are mostly gone. Dr. Alfred Drewali is the program manager of Uganda National Expanded Program on Immunization.
About 90 districts have used all the vaccine stocks they have. We also now know most districts have run out of stock, and those who are holding the balance of vaccines, majority of them are having doses in small quantities.
The shortage coincides with India banning exports of AstraZeneca. Drewali says the government is working round the clock to find another supply of the vaccine as soon as possible.
So we are expecting another consignment of vaccines on 14th of this month, and that can take us for another 1 or 2 weeks, and then the hunt continues for more vaccine doses.
Drewali says the first priority for expected vaccines will be Ugandans who qualify for a second AstraZeneca jab. Uganda is also looking at Johnson & Johnson, Sinovac, and other vaccine options. Dr. Jane Ruth Acheng is Uganda's health minister. She says vaccine shortages are a general problem across Africa. Acheng adds that the government has already ordered more doses.
I want to believe that every African country is worried, not only Uganda, because we are all having difficulty in accessing vaccines, and the government of Uganda has gone ahead to place in orders. To date, the government of Uganda has placed in 5 million through the African Union. Hopefully, we can place in more as resources keep on coming.
Available statistics indicate that only 1.7% of Uganda's population has been able to at least get the first COVID-19 jab. According to World Health Organization, 47 African countries, including Uganda, might fail to meet the target of 10% vaccination of their populations by September. WHO says about 225 million doses of the COVID-19 vaccines are needed on the continent urgently amid surges in new cases. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Former Zambian President Kenneth Kaunda has been admitted to a military hospital in the capital, Lusaka. A short statement released by his office today said the 97-year-old former statesman has not been feeling well and requested prayers from Zambians and the international community. Kaunda was a leading figure in his country's independence movement. He served as the first president of Zambia from 1964 to 1991. The UN Refugee Agency is repeating its call to Tanzanian authorities to stop forcibly deporting asylum seekers back to Mozambique, where their lives are in danger. Again, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
2.5 months have passed since Islamist militants attacked civilians in the gas-rich coastal town of Palma in northern Mozambique, killing dozens and displacing more than 70,000. While the level of violence has diminished, the UN Refugee Agency says armed conflict and insecurity continue to displace thousands of people. UNHCR spokesman Baba Baluch says people are fleeing daily in a desperate search for safety, both in Mozambique and across the border in Tanzania.
9,600 desperate people trying to seek refuge across the border inside Tanzania and being forced to return to a situation of danger is really grave, and it is a dire situation. Refugees must not be forced back into a situation of danger.
That, he says, violates the principle of non-refoulement or no forced return. International human rights law states that no one should be returned to a country where they would face torture or other treatment that could cause irreparable harm. Baluch says UNHCR teams along the Tanzania-Mozambique border say people being forcibly returned to Mozambique arrive in desperate condition. He says many become separated from their family members, adding to their anguish.
Those pushed back from Tanzania end up in a dire situation at the border and are exposed to gender-based violence and health risks, as many are sleeping in the open at night in extreme cold without blankets or a roof over their heads. There's an urgent need for emergency relief items, including food.
Humanitarian agencies estimate nearly 800,000 people have been displaced in Mozambique's northern Cabo Delgado province since armed groups, some affiliated with Islamic State militants, launched attacks in the region in 2017. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Zimbabwe's government on Monday is reintroducing a lockdown as a way to contain rising coronavirus cases in the South African nation. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Announcing the reintroduction of the lockdown Saturday night on national television, Vice President Constantino Chiwenga said complacency had resulted in a recent spike in cases of the coronavirus responsible for the COVID-19 disease.
In addition, our vaccination against COVID-19 is going on very well. The country is, however, experiencing a surge in cases. The last 7 days have seen 596 new cases and 26 deaths as compared to the same period in May last year, where we had 132 new cases and 6 deaths.
Chiwenga, who doubles as Zimbabwe's health minister, said all gatherings except for funerals would be banned come Monday. Only 30 people would be allowed at funerals. He did not indicate when the new measures will be reviewed. Itairu Sike, head of non-profit community working group on health in Zimbabwe, commended the government for tightening the lockdown to avoid a pending third wave disaster.
Yes, this may look a bit draconian, but the measures are still necessary if we are to save lives. So it is important that the people of Zimbabwe should embrace these measures. It is also important for those Zimbabweans that are eligible to be vaccinated to come forward and willingly, you know, get vaccinated if the country is to move towards, you know, achieving the herd immunity of vaccinating at least 60% of the population, which translates to about 10 million Zimbabweans.
Zimbabwe's vaccination effort against the infection has recently been hit by shortages of the shots. But officials say the country still has stocks of the 1.7 million vaccines it has received from China, Russia, and India since February. Last week, Zimbabwe received 25,000 Sputnik doses from Russia. That was a few days after it rejected Johnson & Johnson vaccines from the African Union, financed by the African Export-Import Bank. Zimbabwe has 39,852 confirmed coronavirus infections and 1,632 deaths, according to the Johns Hopkins University, which tracks the global outbreak. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international.